on air on Fan for Racing Radio. This is Monday night, September the 26th, and our show tonight is our Texas NASCAR Race Review, along with Hot Topic Sound Off. We are going to start during this first half hour talking about some short track news around the country, and we'll follow that up with some updates from the ARCA Menards, ARCA East, and ARCA West series. Then we have our media interview with Scott Miller, the NASCAR Senior Vice President of Competition regarding tire issues at Texas Motor Speedway. After that, we'll update the NASCAR Truck Series. They're off track this weekend, but they will be back on track at Talladega next weekend. And finally, in our last half hour tonight for the review show, we are going to talk about the NASCAR Xfinity and Cup Series playoff races at the 1.5-mile track of Texas Motor Speedway. And finally, we'll have our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off conversation with our Fan for Racing crew. And joining us for tonight's show is our co-host for tonight, and that is Sal Segala. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Oh, thank you, Sharon.
Okay, we're going to move forward now with some short track news. And let me kind of go to my notes here that I sent you earlier. There's a lot that happened over this past weekend on the short track news scene. As far as dirt, Brad Sweet extended his World of Outlaws Sprint Car Series Championship lead with a dominant outing at Sharon Speedway this weekend. And that's from theworldofoutlaws.com. So Brad Sweet continues to do very well there in the World of Outlaws.
Yeah, he does. He's always been good on dirt. That's his specialty. I don't know what happened to my team's thing. It kicked me completely out, and I can't get to it. And I was on it earlier.
I'm not sure what happened there, Sal. I'll go ahead and read the other things here then, and then you can just respond. We've got, that came one day after Rico Abreu's first outlaw win in 4 years came at Eldora Speedway this weekend, again, from worldofoutlaws.com. So it was pretty big event there. So Rico Abreu, Brad Sweet, all doing well there in that series.
Okay, let me try to go. You're on Floor or Racing America?
I'm on Team right now, the Teams app. Tyler Courtney took the All-Star Circuit of Champions portion of the Eldora Four Crown Nationals. So that's from the allstarsprint.com. And then fellow NOS Energy sponsored driver Justin Grant claimed the USAC National Sprint Car portion of the night for his 50th USAC Triumph. That is huge. That's from USAC Media. And Logan Seavey took his second USAC Silver Crown win at the same track. Then Ryan Gustin claimed a big World of Outlaws late model series win at Stateliness Speedway in the last lap pass from theworldofoutlaws.com. On the short track scene, Stephen Nassi claimed the Southern Super Series finale as Hunter Robbins won the championship. That is from Racing America. And then Jackson Boone took his first pro late model victory outside of Nashville at Five Flag Speedway, also from Racing America. After a procedural race.
Yeah, that was
race,
a good race.
Did you watch it?
I got
it?
A chance to watch that one. Yeah, I watched it.
Oh, good.
I watched it because we had three drivers from out here from California that were racing the pro late. And a matter of fact, Sean Hingarani, who's our guest, he raced in the pro late, but never qualified, hit the wall, so he crashed his car. But he did race in the super late race, which is the one that Stephen Nassi won. That was a really good race. I mean, if for those of you that got to watch it, I know you guys seen one heck of a race right there. Nassi came all the way from like third or fourth to win the race, and he caught Bubba Pollard with like, and they have a a bad reputation for each other. But he raced them clean and got by them with like 20 to go. And so it was a really good, really super good race to watch.
Okay. And then also a question here from Matt Weaver. After a procedural race for a late model stock field, does Martinsville Speedway need a traction compound? So you can read more about that over at Racing America as well. So just some notes that I get, you know, from Motorsports Media or somewhere. I forget the name of it, but Aaron Bearden, who used to be a part of our group here, he sends out a newsletter throughout the week, and that's some of the notes from his newsletter. So it captures quite a bit. Okay, so anything that you, any other racing that you wanted to talk about?
No, that's it. I mean, we're not doing anything until, I'm not doing anything until this weekend. All my series were quiet this weekend, so it was a quiet weekend to just take care of things around here, around the house. But I was able to watch the two races from Five Flag Friday and Saturday night, which was really super good.
Okay. Well, I will say, Jay and I talked about a little bit of controversy between Peyton Sellers and Lane Riggs, who won his weekly touring series national championship. There was a little controversy around that. Well, Peyton Sellers came back and he conquered Martinsville 300 this weekend. So that had to be a little bit of redemption for him.
Yeah, it took him forever to find, to pick the, not pick, but to figure out who was going to be the national champion. I still don't know if there was ever one. But I know it was like they're already like 2 days in, and
yeah.
I was
they did an audit and it took them some time to take care of that.
Took them forever to do it, but I don't know. I guess they finally got it now.
Yeah, and Lane Riggs ended up being the champion. But that meant that Peyton Sellers came in second. So he felt like going into the race that he knew what he needed in order to win the championship. And then he felt like everything changed after the race, and they did that audit. He said he didn't understand why they couldn't have done that audit before the race so that everybody knows what's going on coming into it. And I have to agree to a certain extent there. But I think NASCAR did the right thing by doing the audit. I just think they should have done it sooner.
Yeah, but I mean, they've done that in the past, so it's, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
it's happened before.
Yeah. Matter of fact, it happened the year that Trevor Huddleston finished, they ended up finding out that Trevor finished like 2 or 3 points behind. And we haven't had known on the West Coast all the way back. Gosh, almost going back to, I think, David Gillen or one of those drivers since way back then that have won the national championship from the West Coast. But they had to do an audit one the year that Trevor was in the running for it. He fell like 2 or 3 points behind.
Yeah, that's disappointing when things like that happen. But I guess controversy has kind of been a stalwart within the NASCAR Weekly Touring Series. I wish they would look at it and see what they can do to kind of avoid the controversy, because when there's controversy like that, I think it gives them a little bit of a black eye. I think those audits could be done earlier rather than later, so that everybody knows what they need going into those final races of the season.
You know, and it's a complicated formula
system
they use, because we try to, the year that Trevor was running for it, he ran a bunch of races. We were trying to figure out how they, and it was just,
I guess it has to be a full field. If it's not a full field, see, part of the controversy was that there were two races in that finale, and Lane Riggs felt that if he did not race the second race, it wouldn't be a full field. And so any advantage anybody might gain in that second race would not hurt him and his chances at winning the championship. So he opted out of the race. And so it left it without a full field. And that's the kind of games that they're playing with that.
Well, they it's been going on for years because, like, out here, we would have, like, a 12-car field, and then Tim would put, like, 7 or 8 super stocks into the race to fill the field, you know, and they did that back east, too. They're doing it. Everybody, that's been the thing that's been going on for years is that the cars need to be teched as a late model, you know, and there is pictures of Tim with super stocks, the same thing back east when I can't remember who had won it, but they had pictures, Tim and them had pictures of them too, and then they found out that the tracks were allowing, you know, them to bring in, they even brought in these little imports that that we call the enduro cars, and they try to count the enduro cars as part of the field to fill the field, because depending how many cars are in the field, then they take their best so many races and all that, and that's how I did the formula. But it's a mess. I mean,
they need to review that.
It's a joke.
They need to review that and come up with a better program. I'm not sure what the answer is. But it seems like there's a lot of manipulation that can happen that can hurt one driver and help another. And they use it because they're working within the rules that are currently set. So I do think that NASCAR needs to change those rules. And if they're going to do an audit, do the audit before that last race so that everybody knows what they're dealing with going into the last race of the season.
Exactly.
Okay, and then over at Flow Racing, they have a lot of the replays from the weekend. So, and same thing at Racing America. If you miss some races, a lot of times you can catch the replay of that race and go back and watch it. I know Eldora put on a lot of really good racing this past weekend, and they've got all kinds of racing that happened that you can catch through those replays. And then look ahead to see what races are coming up for the following week. There's never a shortage of racing to be watched at Flow Racing, at Racing America, or even MAV TV. And guess what, Sal? I'm so happy. My TV service has brought MAV TV onto our schedule, so I now have MAV TV where I can watch some of the racing.
That's neat because there's, you know, they show a lot of, you know, a lot of race, old races and stuff like that. You know, along with some of the newer ones, and you know, but they do show a lot of the old ones.
Mhm. Yeah, I'm really glad to have it back. I had it before, and then they took it off of that service, and then I switched services, and they didn't have it. But now they do, so I'm really happy to have it back. If you want to know about rankings as well, they at Flow Racing, they've got all the different series, and you can look at what the rankings are for those different series as well. So that's another feature that's really good. You can see the results of the races. You can see the schedule of what's coming up. They really do a good job at both of those websites.
Yeah, they do. They do an excellent job on those websites.
Okay. Now, Sal, I know we're just giving some updates in the ARCA Menard series. So after we do those updates, what I think I'm going to do is you and I will do a setup before the Scott Miller interview of some things that happened this weekend. We'll listen to the interview, which is a little more than 5 minutes, and then you and I will have our commentary after that. Okay?
Okay.
All right. The next race for the ARCA Menard series is going to be the Ursnacks 200 on October 1st at 4 p.m. Eastern Time at Salem Speedway. Speedway, and that will be televised on MAV TV. The ARCA East has completed their series. Sammy Smith is the champion, and there will be no more ARCA East races this season. But the ARCA West is still in action. Their next race is also on October 1st. That race is at 6:45 p.m. Pacific time. That would be 9:45 Eastern time at All American Speedway, and that will be available via Flow Racing, and you'll be able to see that live streaming. And then also the Sioux Chief Showdown is done. So Sammy Smith was the champion there as well. So really there's just the two series that are still racing. I think one has two races left and the other has three races left. So there's still a little more racing to go here in the ARCA Menards series. It's just won't be at the fast pace that we're accustomed to seeing over the summer. They slow down a little bit during the fall.
Yeah, the ARCA Menards has, we got this one, and then we have one on the, I think it's the 14th in Vegas. And then they have their championship race at Phoenix.
Yes, and I know you and I are both
in
the Vegas race.
Yeah, and then after that, then they got the championship race at Phoenix.
Phoenix, yes. So definitely looking forward to whatever racing we have left. There's always radio coverage available at arcaracing.com, and they always have some great articles over at arcaracing.com as well. So I know Menards Fan Fest is going to take place at Toledo Speedway with a past champion celebration. So that's something to read up on as well. And that, especially if you're going to be out there at Toledo for the races that are taking place there. And I believe that's going to be their season finale, the ARCA Menards Series, at Toledo Speedway this year. So something to look at there. Okay, let's go ahead and talk about some of the things that happened this weekend. Did you catch the Cup Series race this weekend?
Yeah, I caught the I watched it today. Then watched the replay of it today because we're busy on yesterday.
Okay, well there are a couple of incidents that happened. One was between, and I've heard a lot about this one. Denny Hamlin and I remember the other driver's
William
name.
William Byron,
thank you. Between Denny Hamlin and William Byron, where they were doing a lot of back and forth. Well, during a caution, William Byron hit Denny Hamlin in the back of his car and sent him into the infield. NASCAR said that they missed that because they were looking at another incident that brought out the caution and didn't catch the incident between the two drivers. So what they said they were going to do is go back and review what took place there, and there could still be a penalty assessed this week. So they usually come out with those kind of penalties on Tuesday or Wednesday, so that's something for everybody to watch for. And then also there's another incident that happened, and this one was between Ty Gibbs and Ty Dillon on pit road. And I guess Ty Dillon was coming out of his pit box. He got a little close to Ty Gibbs, and Ty Gibbs just took a turn straight back into his door and hit Ty Dillon. And what was bad about that is there were people working on pit road, and he could have bumped that car into those people very easily if you watch the video. So there's a couple of incidents that I know NASCAR is going to take a look at. And those two incidents in particular are just not acceptable based on previous things that have happened within NASCAR. And so I kind of fully expect some penalties to come out this week and on both of those cases.
Quick on the Ty Gibbs incident. We've seen Noah Gragson do the same thing last year and they didn't do nothing to him.
Really?
Remember on pit road when he came in and then he backed up and ran. Gosh, I can't remember who it was. They're working on his car. It was one of the guys. He had an incident with them. He just had an incident on the track and he backed up into him and he says, "Oh, I didn't see."
Oh,
it.
I do remember
he
that.
He was back there. Yeah, remember in NASCAR just they batted
well,
the
bet.
Eye and actually just let it go.
Yeah, I bet they brought him in and talked to him though, and I bet Dale Jr., the Junior Motorsports Organization, sat him down and talked to him after that as well. I never think that using your car as a weapon should be acceptable, especially where other people are
involved.
Oh,
yeah. Involved. Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so, you know, that was those were two of the things that happened, and the reason why they talked to Scott Miller, he's the senior vice president of competition at NASCAR, but there was also all of the issues with the tires this week, and last week, but there were some more issues this week, and so he kind of addresses that as well. In this interview that we have coming up, and like I say, it's about a little more than 5 minutes. But before he talks about that, I wanted to get your thoughts about the tire issues too, Sal, this weekend.
Yeah, you know what? Every 3-4 years we have issues with the tires with NASCAR. You know, so I mean, it's not. It shouldn't be anything new, you know, if the fans, you know, should, you know, be, you know, raving about, you know, I mean, you know, especially with this new car, you know what, I mean, once again, you know what, I don't think it was fully developed. It was ready to go. I think they should have tested the car on every track, you know what, and they know especially with the tire compound, because that's where with the tires, because that's the first thing you're going to have, one of the first things you're going to have issues with the tires, you know,
yep.
but then it's kind of hard to test, because how do you test in the heat, you test in the cold, you know, you don't know what the weather's going to be like in Texas, not like it was this past weekend. But
I was just going to bring
that in.
It was really hot in Texas this weekend.
Yeah.
And the tire compound really did not work. People were slipping and sliding all over the place.
Yeah, and I mean, NASCAR's in a catch-22 situation with that. You know, they rely heavily on Goodyear, you know, to do what they have to do, you know, as far as making the right call, you know, on making sure we have the right tires. So,
exactly, and I
you
know Goodyear was down there, and the NASCAR officials were down there looking at every single tire that was coming off of those cars and trying to determine what was going on.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know what? Good thing it wasn't at all the tracks and just you know a couple of races. You know, so I mean, yeah, you know, they'll work through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to work through it. You know what? Which will be a good thing. You know.
Exactly. Scott Miller brings up a good point on here as well in this interview, and they talked about it in the booth as well, that there could be that not everybody had issues with their tires. They mentioned that some of the teams were being very conservative with their tires, and not everybody had those issues. But there were others that did have those issues, and, well, I'll let Scott Miller talk about it. So
you know what,
we'll go ahead.
And exactly. You know, and just real quick. You know, and a lot of it is the aggressive setups that they use. You know, as far as you know, their setups. I mean, so you know that makes a huge difference too. You know how aggressive they go on the setup. You know, as to how they're going to burn their tires out, but. You know,
that is so true. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and pull up this interview. It is 5 minutes 36 seconds long, so we'll be able to listen to the whole thing, Sal. I hesitate to play it now only because we've advertised it coming on at 9 o'clock. So is there anything else about the race that you want to kind of bring up before we play this?
No, that was it. I mean, I just think that that whole, with all the technology we have, you know, there's no way you're going to miss a driver hitting a driver, especially during a yellow, because they're not even at full speed. They're going whatever the pace lap speed is, 50, 55 miles an hour. You know what? There is no way you can. How can you miss it when, especially when you're talking about two drivers that are in the chase, and the cameras are focused on the drivers that are in the chase.
Scott Miller addresses
you can't.
He addresses that in his interview and some of the things that they're looking at possibly doing in the future to kind of not miss those kind of things for the future. And if they do need to go back and review, how they can have the review be better with but anyway, I'll let him address it in his interview. I don't want to give away everything from the interview. And I know a lot of people have already listened to it, but for those people that may not have heard that interview yet, I don't want to take too much away from it. But I'll just say he does address that in this interview. Okay. But I know a lot of people are asking that question, how could they have missed it? And I think they were just focused on the Truex incident because that's what brought out the caution. And it was after that caution was called and they were reviewing everything with regard to Truex and they just didn't see it. So, and you'll hear him talk about that in this interview. But I one thing that I've said about the next-gen car is that they knew coming into this season that it was not in its perfected image yet. They knew that this was going to be a work in progress throughout the season and that that's the reason they set up the communication between the teams, the manufacturers, and NASCAR with just about every decision that's been made. And they meet on a weekly basis to review what's happened in the previous week or talk about any concerns of the upcoming week to see what they can do to make things better. Unfortunately, some of these things can't just be changed on a dime. They have to be, again, you know, they have to look at what can be done. Some things can be changed, but not everything can be changed right away. So we'll see what happens. And we've got his interview coming up. I guess we're 2 minutes in. So I'm going to go ahead and start the interview, and we'll hear what Scott Miller. Again, he's the Senior Vice President of Competition at NASCAR. And when something happens during a race, what happens is the media will ask for an explanation from NASCAR. So then they come and they are available for questions so that any questions from the media can be addressed directly by NASCAR and Scott Miller. So here we go. We'll go ahead and hear what they have to say.
Talk about what you saw today. There's a lot of questions about what happened with the tires.
Well, I mean, obviously we saw a lot of tire problems and we saw a lot of teams that didn't have tire problems. And, you know, we're working through that. Goodyear's working through that with the teams and, you know, working through what the setups were, what the air pressures were to try to get to the bottom of it. But, you know, there was a lot of teams that reported no problems to us post-race and, you know, and they did admit to being a little bit on the conservative side, air pressure and being closer to the suggested minimums that Goodyear recommended.
Scott, did you guys consider penalizing William Byron for tapping Denny Hamlin there under caution? And if so, what were the discussions and why the ultimate decision not to penalize?
So I'll have to be honest with you, Bob. When we were in the tower, we were paying more attention to the actual cause of the caution up there and dispatching our equipment. The William Byron, Denny Hamlin thing, we had no eyes on. We saw Denny go through the grass, and by the time we got to a replay that showed the incident well enough to do anything to it, we'd gone back to green, but I'm not sure that that issue is completely resolved as of yet. So we'll be looking at that when we get back to work.
Any potential
or
links over that?
We're gonna work through those things, Bob.
On the tires, this is the same tire we're gonna use in Las Vegas. Are you guys gonna talk to the teams and the Goodyear to kind of figure out maybe if there's similar issues there, try to avoid that?
That's what I said. Goodyear is working with the teams about the, on their setups and everything else to try to, try to mitigate the problems that we're certainly seeing. We're all learning about the setups, the tires. Goodyear's learning about the construction, the new wheel. So it's part of a learning. It's an unfortunate part of a learning process. But as I said earlier, the ones that didn't have any problems admitted to being on the conservative side with all the things that are difficult on tires. They make speed, but they're difficult on tires.
Scott, some of the teams said, if they were the conservative teams, said that there's still an amount of laps that a tire should last, right? How long should the tires last? Is this some sort of, they didn't have enough tire today?
I don't really know how to comment on how long a tire should last. The top four at least ran 64 laps, home, and if they can go 64 laps, they have plenty of tires to get the job done.
In reference to the Hamlin Byron incident, could you have put Hamlin back in his position had you seen it soon enough? Would that have been what you guys would have looked at?
So there would probably, if we had seen that good enough to react to it real time, which we should have, like, no excuse there, there would probably have been two courses of action. One would have been to put Hamlin back where he was, or the other would be to have made Williams start in the back.
So moving forward, because this is a situation that impacts a couple playoff drivers and could impact their playoffs, and you guys have talked about in the tower of making some changes when there have been issues, like here having the committee with cautions after the All-Star race, what more can you do to try to be better or try to avoid a situation like this where you're able to see something, especially with it being a playoff race and so much at stake?
Well, so we don't have the cameras and the monitors that we've got, we dedicate them mostly to officiating and seeing, like, our safety vehicles and how to dispatch them and all that. And by the time we put all those cameras up, we don't have room for all of the in-car cameras to be monitored. So we're going to look at having, because if we would have had immediate access to the 24 in-car camera, that would have helped us a lot with, being able to find that quickly. So that's definitely one of the things that we're looking at.
What about the race? Obviously, a lot of cautions. What about the track itself and the things that have been talked about, reconfiguration, rebuild the track? Your thoughts on that after today's race?
Well, I think the general consensus, and this just isn't my opinion, is this has been a difficult track to race on for a while now. So what the plans are for it or anything like that, I don't have any details on any of that. But if you ask the drivers, if you ask the crew chiefs, it's been a difficult place over the years, for sure.
With the teams, et cetera, and with Goodyear, because you'll have a debrief, right? How do you reach out to the teams? How do you find out? And, what will the process be?
Well, I mean, we have a pretty open dialogue with the teams and the engineers. So we have a meeting with Goodyear. Goodyear has open dialogues with the teams. So it's not like anybody doesn't want to participate in that. We all, as an industry, want to figure out how we can be better.
Everyone, thank you.
Thank
you
for your time. Okay, that completes the interview with Scott Miller. Your thoughts after hearing what he had to say, Sal?
I mean, the tire thing is cut and dry. I mean, they're gonna go with the team, talk to the teams, and see what kind of setups they had. I mean, that's a gimme right there. They're gonna, like what I mentioned earlier. Some use more aggressive camber, stuff like that, so of course, they're going to wear their tires out faster, and Goodyear's going to work with the teams to try and bring a compound, that'll last from pit stop to pit stop. Because now the way it's set up, that Goodyear finally, when we had that last fiasco some years ago, that we had almost the whole season going bad. You know, at least now the tires, with the problem they were having back then was the tires weren't lasting between fuel stops. You know,
mm-hmm.
So the teams are having to come in early, you know, to put tires on before fuel stops. So Goodyear worked through that, and they were able to get a tire, you know, that'll last. I mean, we see them now, you know, guys go out, you know, they'll do a fuel stop, and they'll keep the same tires on and just keep on going,
yep.
You know. So, yeah, that's cut and dry. But I don't fall for anything he said about the Hamlin Byron incident, because they have enough guys up there. They have enough cameras around the track. It's funny that when they say, oh, somebody spun, well, you know what? Let's go back. I mean, it could be somebody like Cody Ware that could spin, that's not even a front runner, that's running 40th. You know what? But it's funny that they have a camera that'll go back that fast and they'll catch the spin. And here you got two drivers in the front of the field, you know, that are racing for the championship, that are in the chase. You know what? They have cameras on everything. You know, I don't, there was too much time in between that they could have made that they could even ran one or two extra yellow laps to go back with the incident, especially.
He said there's no real good excuse, but they are looking at putting in-car cameras in all of the cars for next year.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course he's going to say there's no good excuse, because they got caught with their pants down. You know what? And you know, I mean, from a media standpoint, we've been in.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I know.
Why keep bragging
media,
on them if they've already admitted it?
Yeah. You know, from a media standpoint, we've gone to the media centers in the rooms, you know, where they have the TVs and they have, you know, 50,000 monitors there, you know, where they can, you know, see everything, you know. It's a bad situation for Hamlin. You know, it was just, you know, I mean, sure, so you penalize William Byron for bumping Hamlin, but you still don't give Hamlin back his spot, you know, in the race, you know, where he really needed it. You know what, the penalty isn't going to help him any.
I hear what you're saying. We haven't heard what the penalty is yet, and if they will give points to Hamlin, I don't know how they do that. But
you can't give him points because you don't know what. Yeah, I mean, you can't give him points because you don't know how the rest of the race would have gone with him.
Mm-hmm.
Say he would have been up front, or you know, or even contending for a win. You know, so I mean, you know, there's no. The only thing they could do is just penalize William Byron for the hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take away from him. You know,
I think it should be a pretty stiff penalty any time a driver uses their car during a caution as a weapon. It should be an absolute no, not acceptable, no tolerance kind of thing, I think.
Oh, I agree 100%. I agree 1,000%. But NASCAR, I mean, we've seen in the past they play favorites. And even when they hand out the penalties, some of the penalties we see, I mean, we'll talk about it and say, that's it. I mean, come on,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's it.
Well, this year's
been
a little bit more no nonsense with some of the penalties they've given out this year, because I think a lot of people were saying that they need to be stricter. With some of these things, and I think that's what we're going to find out with the tire issues too. I know you know this, where they give them a PSI for those tires every single week of what the recommended PSI should be, and a lot
well,
of
they
these
have
teams
to
play
because,
with that.
Well, they have to, because I remember a few years back, teams
mm-hmm.
were going out there with like 10, 12 pounds of pressure. I mean, the tire looked like it was completely flat, you know, because they wanted to build up pressure to where they wanted it, and they had to do it because they're blowing tires, you know what, and it was an issue, you know what,
mm-hmm.
the tires weren't even inflated to where it was a safe, you know, where you could say it was a safe,
exactly,
you
and
know, it was safe
happens.
For the, not only for the driver, but for the competitors around them, you know, but,
and I've
but,
said this
you know
before
what?
Too, you know, a lot of the rules happen for those, happen because we've got and you know this is true. There were more people who didn't have tire issues than people who did have tire issues. So what happens is those few people that push that are the reason why a rule is put into place, and they're given a tighter and tighter window of what to work with it with those things. NASCAR wants to give them a little bit of leeway, but they abuse it every single time. And I remember, I forget who it was that said it, but somebody said NASCAR has to kind of govern us because we cannot govern ourselves. They will, it would just be crazy. And it's true. There has to be a sanctioning body. You can't expect the teams to sanction themselves.
Exactly. I mean, you know what? I mean, we see it week after week. I mean, you know what? I mean, look at the whole time Jimmy Johnson was racing. You know what? You know, Chad, how many times did he get, you know, push, you know, bending the rules, you know what? Finding the gray areas, you know what? And getting caught, you know, and I mean, and it happens now, even in short track racing. You know what? We had two cars last 2 weeks ago get DQ'd, you know, you see it all the time. You know, I talk to Ricky Brooks a lot. He tells me about all the, you know, because I read about it and I see it. You know, he tells me about all the, you know, all the,
exactly.
You know, all the stuff that he sees.
The teams are going to try to get whatever little inch they can take, and if they can get that inch, they're going to take it another inch or another inch, and then it's a foot, and then it's, you know, several feet or a mile, as long as NASCAR lets them get by with it. So they have to kind of put their foot down at some point. And what's happening, I think, in this case is NASCAR is getting the blame for what the teams are doing to try to get that little extra competitive advantage. So I think that they need to continue to kind of toe the line on these guys.
They do, you know what? And I mean, they're going to do it to the best, you know, to the best that they can. You know, it's just going to be, you know, like I said, it's whatever happens, it's going to be worse on Byron than it's not going to help Denny Hamlin. And I mean, unless they're that close in the points, you know, but, you know.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It really is. So we'll see what happens when they come out with the penalty. Like you say, it's never going to be a perfect world. It never has been, and it's never going to be. And I think a lot of times NASCAR fans want everything to be in a neat little package that makes it a perfect world. But we live in an imperfect world, and so it's never, ever going to be a perfect situation. And every situation is different. And I do think that NASCAR does try to look at everything that they can to the best of their ability. So,
you know, and even going back to the Ty Gibbs incident for a little bit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ty Gibbs. You know what? He gets out of the car. He praises God. God this. God that. But you know what? It just shows he's normal like every other kid, because you know what I mean, he lost his temper against Ty Dillon, you know what, and bumped Ty Dillon on pit road, you know, okay. What and almost knocked him into an official, but yet he'll get out and say, oh, I'm sorry, you know what, you know God bless the, you know, the people, you know, and you know, he's trying to be like his grandfather, you know, Joe Gibbs, you know, who's a devout Christian, you know. I'm not bashing him. I'm not saying that it's, you know, it's wrong, but you know what? He's human. You know what?
Right.
You know, and
well,
he needs to remember that himself.
Joey Logano, they say he's one person when he's outside of the car, and when he gets inside the car, he's an entirely different person. Same thing with,
you know what,
with Kyle Busch and a lot of these other drivers.
Yeah,
and we certainly
that's
see
their
it
job.
With Ty Gibbs. Hmm?
Yeah, that's his job. His job is to race a car. His job is to win races. You know what, and you know, and everybody has attitude, you know what, and, you know, but, you know, but, you know, don't try to be holier than thou is kind of like my thing.
I know
what
you're saying.
You know what, just be yourself, you know what, everybody knows, you know, I'm not going to start getting into the Bible and all that, but it says everybody's sinner, you know, nobody's perfect. except for
exactly
one person.
Right.
You know what? And you know what? And that's the way Ty gives. Just needs to keep just doing what he's doing. You know, if he gets mad, he gets mad. But you know what? But don't take it to the extreme when they interview him. You know.
Yeah.
You know,
it
to,
almost seems insincere
you know,
when that happens. Yeah, I know
exactly.
You
know
what? Saying. Yeah.
Just say, hey, you know what, I messed up. You know what, I lost my temper, you know what, and you know what, and I'm sorry for what I did. Leave it at that, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
But he goes into the extremes, you know, right away, you know. And I'm sure his grandpa loves it because his grandpa wants his whole family, you know, to be like that, you know what? But, you know, he's got to remember
but,
he's a kid. You know what, he has his own personality.
He's so young. Yep, he's still very young, and
we're gonna
he's still got a lot to learn.
We're going to see a lot more out of him, too, like that. I mean, you know what? You know, some of the nicest drivers out there, you know, lost it. Mark Martin has lost it. He's probably one of the best.
Yep, they've all, you know, Jeff
Bobby
Burton lost it that one time with Jeff Gordon. Nobody is perfect. We know that. Absolutely. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on, Sal, to the truck series. They did not race this past weekend. Their next race is actually going to be the Chevy Silverado 250 at Talladega Super Speedway this weekend, Saturday, October the 1st, at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Of course, it's going to be televised on Fox Sports 1. And they'll have radio coverage on MRN and Sirius XM Radio. Jay and I will talk more about that upcoming race this Thursday night on our preview show. But these guys are in the heat of their playoff as well. And so that's going to be interesting because this race at Talladega, as you know, is always a wild card event. And so the Camping World Truck Series, just to kind of give you a perspective on where this stands in their playoffs, they are in the playoff round of 8 right now. Talladega will be the second race in their playoff round of 8. And Homestead Miami on October 22nd is going to be that elimination race that tells them who will be the final four drivers to compete for the championship at Phoenix in November. So this is a big race. Ty Majeski already punched his ticket into the playoffs. Now we're wondering who's going to be the next driver to punch their ticket, who's going to be on top of the wild card at Talladega Super Speedway, and then who's going to win Homestead Miami Speedway on the 22nd. So let's go ahead and cover the points there as they stand after the last race at Bristol Motor Speedway.
All right. Like you said, Ty Majeski is already in, so he's first on the list, and that second is Chandler Smith. Third is Zade Smith. Fourth is Stuart Friesen, and then below the cut line is John Hunter Nemechek, who is 9 points below Stuart Friesen. Kristen Ekkes, who's 13 points below Stuart Friesen. Grant Enfinger, who is 15 points below, and Ben Rhodes, who is 18 points below. So you got a tight little thing going on
right there.
So I mean, even at 18 points out for Ben Rhodes, it could be anybody's race to take that spot from Stuart Friesen, and even take the spot away from Zane Smith, who's 21 points, you know, behind,
mm-hmm.
You know, who's 21 points on top. As we've seen, you know, Chase Elliott's already had a couple bad races in the Cup Series, and Chase lost almost all of his playoff points. You know,
exactly.
Once we get to talking about it. So, I mean, anything is possible. I mean, you know, Stewart could have a bad race. They could have a bad one. Chandler Smith could have one. And even possibly be in a spot, you know, to where John Hunter Nemechek, you know, could push him all the way out. You know, Zane and Stewart having good races. So there's a lot of scenarios that are going to be played right now.
Exactly. especially at a track like Talladega where anybody could win.
Yeah.
And a lot of those drivers could get knocked out of the race like we've seen in some of these other races. And it puts them below the cut line instead of on top of the cut line. So this next race is going to be critical, I think, for the truck series to see how that's going to kind of pan out for that Homestead Miami race on the 22nd. So do not miss Talladega next week.
Oh yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yep, we've already seen three-time champion Matt Crafton miss the round of eight. And something like that could happen, too, where a driver like Matt Crafton could end up winning. And, now you're looking at the points again and trying to get in on points. Then now you've got two drivers getting themselves in on points. And John Hunter Nemechek, everybody thought he would be the, top contender for the championship, and right now he's sitting below that cut line.
He was one of the favorites to win the mm-hmm. championship this year, and look where he's at. He's in a bad spot right now. He's in a spot
exactly
that he probably
right.
never thought he'd ever see himself in.
Exactly right. So they've got an entry list, I think, here already for this race. Natalie Decker is going to be racing for Rayum Brothers. So she's going to be back in the truck series. But you also have, some others that haven't been announced yet. AM Racing hasn't announced their driver yet. I don't see anybody else. Jennifer Jo Cobbs is going to be racing. Ryan Preece. Parker Retzlaff made an announcement that he's going to be racing the number 20 for Young's Motorsports in that race. Austin Wade himself will be in the 22 car for AM Racing, but there's going to be a second AM Racing car as well. So, yeah, there's a lot that can happen when you're talking about Talladega. Brett Holmes is on the list here. Chase Purdy. Parker Kligerman can win at a track like Talladega.
Yep, you got a lot of possibilities there.
A lot of possibilities there. So, also, I thought it was really good news, and we may have talked about this before, but it's worth mentioning again. We know that the All-Star race is going to be at North Wilkesboro on the next year's schedule, and they also mentioned that the NASCAR Craftsman's Truck Series will be racing that same weekend. So that's really big news.
Oh that was some big news.
And that's during the weekend of May 19th to the 21st. Now they haven't announced to the 3rd. I think they said it's going to be a 3-day event out at North Wilkesboro Speedway. So, and it's also in celebration of NASCAR's 75th anniversary, their 75th season. And so I think that there's going to be a third series that's going to be racing that weekend. We still don't know who that third series is going to be yet. I'm guessing it might be the Arca Menard series. So we'll have to wait and see, I guess. Anything else you want to bring up about the truck series, Jay or Sal?
No, that's really about it. I think I figured out our team's thing.
Okay, good.
Yeah, okay.
Good. Okay, so we're a little bit early, but let's go ahead and get into the Xfinity Series that raced out at Texas Motor Speedway this weekend. Noah Gregson made it his fourth consecutive win in that series. He's just been on a hot streak in the truck series this year, especially recently. He's been a big time on building momentum on his way to perhaps winning the championship. It was the 18th annual Andy's Frozen Custard 300 with race winner Noah Gregson, age 24, driving the number 9 Bass Pro Shops True Timber BRCC Chevrolet for team owner Rick Hendrick and crew chief Lucas Lambert. Now, that Rick Hendrick is part owner of Junior Motorsports. He actually races for Junior Motorsports, but keeping in mind that Rick Hendrick is the stakeholder at Junior Motorsports. It was his 12th victory in 129 Xfinity Series races, his 7th victory and 20th top 10 finish this year. Also, his first victory and 4th top 10 finish in 8 races at Texas Motor Speedway. Austin Hill finished 2nd, posting his 2nd top 10 finish in 4 races at Texas Motor Speedway and his 17th top 10 finish in this year. He's also the highest finishing rookie of this race. Ty Gibbs finished 3rd, posting his first top 10 finish in 2 races at Texas. And we'll go ahead and take a look at what happened during this race. Noah Gregson actually ties the record for the most consecutive Xfinity Series wins when he parked his number 9 Junior Motorsports Chevrolet at the finish line. He emerged through the car's roof flap, raised his arms in triumph, taking in all the loud cheers from Texas Motor Speedway grandstands as he celebrated his historic 4th consecutive NASCAR Xfinity Series victory on Saturday afternoon. Now, he has a chance, Sal, to exceed that record and be the record holder if he wins again at Talladega. So, it's the 4th Xfinity Series race, picking up the victory at Texas. And with the win, again, he tied Sam Ard for the most consecutive wins in the series since 1983. He also led a race-high 85 laps en route to his 7th win this season. Austin Hill finished 2nd, 1.2 seconds behind Gregson, and then it was Ty Gibbs who came from the rear of the field to finish 3rd. In 4th place was A.J. Allmendinger, then Riley Herbst, rounding out the top 5. Josh Berry ended the 300-mile race in 6th place with Sheldon Creed, Sam Mayer, Ryan Sieg, and C.J. McLaughlin rounding out the top 10. Daniel Hemric finished 11th. He, in the number 11, finished 1st in the opening stage. It was his first stage win since the season opener at Daytona. But he was involved in a 3rd stage melee that dropped him to the 30th place finishing order. Allmendinger won stage 2, but was also involved in a 3rd stage wreck. So it's kind of interesting that there were a lot of wrecks on Saturday as well. There were 14 lead changes among 7 drivers and 9 cautions for 52 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 113.672 miles per hour. Your thoughts, Sal, about those?
Yeah, it was Noah just really, put spanking on those guys, being one of the I thought for a while Austin Hill, might have had took a couple shots at Noah, after that last restart, but just really couldn't get to him the way he really wanted to. And a track at that fast, you really don't want to move a driver too much either. It can be serious. But, Ty Gibbs, finishing in the 3rd spot, I think Ty just used up his car and had nothing left for Noah at all.
Yeah, I would agree.
It was good to see AJ Allmendinger, get the 4th spot. Then, of course, Sheldon Creed, to have that 7th place finish, even though he's already out of the, he's out of the chase. But, I still say that that there's some drivers there that still own Noah, and I think they're all waiting for.
Yeah. For the
I
right
think they're
time.
Waiting for. I think they're waiting for Phoenix when it counts.
Yeah.
They're not gonna.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. He's been very aggressive. And I think some of these drivers are looking for payback down the line.
Oh yeah, and I think come Phoenix, and I think he's going to have a hard time trying to win that championship.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I do think Riley Herbst. I wanted to bring him up too. He had another top five finish here. He's taken a lot of heat because of his dad's money. Is the only reason that he's in that car. But I think Riley Herbst has really been coming into his own and running pretty well here in the Xfinity Series of late.
Oh, yeah, he has. I mean, you know, he's starting to, I guess what you could say, kind of like, starting to get a little bit more aggressive, you know what, starting to really try to put his car up there, up front. He knows what's at stake. He wants to make the final four, so I think it's going to be interesting, how the rest of the season plays out for him, if he does get into the final four. I know when we get to the point, I know he's right there below the cut line, but, there's a lot that can happen, especially, with Talladega coming up, he's a good race and, to break that thing. But,
But I think Riley's a talented driver. I think he's had a learning curve.
He has had a learning curve, it's been a big learning curve, I think he'll be okay, and I think he'll, I think he'll make a change. Ryan Siegel just kind of been kind of by this time, to be there.
I know what you're saying. Let's go ahead and get the points because we're running out. No, wait a second. We're ahead of time here. I was thinking we're running out of time, but we're not. We got plenty of time. So, yeah, he is quieter. He's not as robust as
flamboyant as all the other drivers.
Right. He's a little more on the quiet side, but I think that Riley, he's always happy too. Anytime I've ever talked to Riley, he's got a smile on his face, and he just seems to have a good attitude, and I think it's more than just his daddy's money is the reason he's in the Xfinity Series. So I can't
wait for him
to win some races, and I know he's knocking on the door.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that Stewart Haas Racing have seen in him. Also the fact, him and Cole are friends. They raced together and
Cole
against
Custer.
Each other, over here at Irwindale. Yeah. So I think that has a lot to do with it, too. He brings a positive attitude, to the team. I really don't see any other Xfinity driver, who could fill that, I'm sure the fans, they have their opinions about who could have filled his shoes, but it's hard, because nobody knows really how what goes on in the shop either, and how receptive he is at the shop, and how good he's with the team and stuff. So,
I think it's going to be interesting. We'll see how it continues to build out. But Cole Custer, I know he sometimes takes a little bit of heat because of his dad as well. But Cole, I know, is a very methodical driver. Do you think Riley is kind of the same way? Is he very methodical in his racing?
I don't know. I think they both have different agendas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Cole has a lot on his shoulders because of the team he's driving on, and the fact, you know, that his dad is vice president, you know, of the team, you know, and Gene Haas, sponsors
mm-hmm.
the car. You know, so, you know, I kind of think, you know, that's kind of where, you know, so I think that, that
he
Cole
takes a lot
has,
of-
he's got a little, he's, he has a lot more pressure. He's got a lot more riding on his career than what riding does. You know, riding just kind of, he'll just let it go. You know, whatever they say, you know, he'll, you know, it, that'll be it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing with Cole is that, you know, I think Cole takes a lot of heat. A lot more heat, you know, because of who his dad is, you know, within the organization, you know. So I kind of think that's what splits the two up.
Mm-hmm. That's good insight, Sal. And I do think that Cole, I think, is very talented as well. And we do see him racing up at the front sometimes, you know, up in that top 10. So... We'll see if he can make it happen as things move forward here. But let's talk about the series point standings in the Xfinity Series after this Andy's Frozen Custard 300 at Texas Motor Speedway.
All right, the way the points are now is you got Noah leading the points. Of course, he's already got his wins, you know, to get, you know, to the next round.
Mm-hmm.
Second is AJ Allmendinger, who's and third you got Ty Gibbs. Fourth we got Austin Hill.
Hmm.
Fifth we got Josh Berry. Sixth we got Justin Allgaier. Seventh is Sam Mayer.
Where are you looking?
And the top eight is
Sal, because where I'm looking, it's a different point standings.
Oh, I'm doing the points. I'm only doing the points with the cut line.
Okay.
The ones on J-Ski. Yeah. No, I'm not doing those series points. Yeah, I'm doing the other ones.
Okay.
But I mean, I go back to the other one.
No, that's fine. Go ahead. Continue.
There we go. Okay, so the one you're looking at is, it's the same thing. It's Noah Gragson in first. AJ Allmendinger in second, Ty Gibbs in third, Austin Hill in fourth, Josh Berry in fifth, Justin Allgaier in sixth, Sam Mayer in seventh, Brad Sieg is eighth, and then Riley Herbst ninth, Daniel Hemric rounds out the top ten, and then from there, then you go down to Brandon Jones and Jeremy Clements, which are all the chase drivers. So you got Austin Hill, who's the highest rookie so far. It looks like he's going to probably end up being our rookie of the year this year with all the,
mm-hmm.
with all the you know, with all
yeah,
the
Yeah, he's the rookie of the year. He's the only rookie that's in the playoffs, so that automatically
yeah.
makes him rookie of the year.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, because the other one would have been Sheldon Creed had he made the
mm-hmm.
had he made the playoffs.
Okay, so, and that's just the straight points of how they stand right now. The other one that you were reading from is, okay, I see where you were at now.
Yeah, so the other one I was reading at was the actual playoff picture.
Playoff points, yeah.
Which is Noah Gragson in first, AJ Allmendinger in second, Ty Gibbs third, Austin Hill in fourth, Josh Berry fifth, Justin Allgaier sixth, Sam Mayer seventh, Ryan Sieg is on the bubble. Actually, Sam Mayer and Ryan Sieg are both tied with him. And Riley Herbst is 1 point out.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Hemric is 8 points out. Brandon Jones is 13 points out. And Jeremy Clements is at a must-lose situation.
All right. He's 29 points out.
Yeah, that's way too far out to.
Yeah, but this next race, a lot can change. Brandon Jones is certainly capable of winning at Talladega.
Oh yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
A lot can change, and who knows? It could be Riley's first win. Daniel Hemric could get another win. Who knows? I mean, there's so much that can happen at Talladega. It is really going to be.
That's what I'm saying. We've seen Daniel Hemric get in, and I mean, we've seen a lot of drivers get in so far this year. You know, by
they got to get around Noah Gregson though, because Noah Gregson is just on a roll.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think. I mean, I understand that Junior, you know, dominated Talladega, but I don't think Noah is. I don't think he's going to be the one of the favorites. I mean, yeah, he'll be one of the favorites because of all the races he's won. But I mean, I think there's other drivers you got to look to as favorites too. And I think Riley could put something together and get a win. But I also think that AJ Allmendinger would be another one to really keep an eye out for.
Absolutely. Allmendinger is very good at Talladega. And here's the thing.
Yeah.
He's got a chance to be the record holder for most consecutive wins in the playoff. And it's going to be interesting to see if he can get that win at Talladega. I think it's going to be hard for him to do. It's not impossible. I'm not suggesting that. But it's going to be hard.
Especially a track like Talladega, you know, where it's, you know what, how many drivers are going to want to push him to the front, you know, if he's in that position, you know, how many are going to want to just leave him hanging out to dry and just say, you know what, you know, I remember this, I remember that, you know what, so, you know, why should I be that guy, you know, to push you to the front, you know, instead, you know, I could push someone else to the front, you know, and it depends on who the teammates are, you know, right next to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, again, there's just so much that can happen. They're your teammates until the very end when you've got to go after that win.
Exactly.
So... Okay, again, we're a little bit early, but I'm going to go ahead and get into the NASCAR Cup Series now. So at Texas Motor Speedway, the 18th annual Auto Trader Echo Park Automotive 500 race winner Tyler Reddick. Now, here's another record. We've had, what, four consecutive non-playoff drivers win in the Cup Series. Tyler Reddick, the next winner, age 26, driving the number 8 Lenovo ThinkEdge Chevrolet for Richard Childress Racing with crew chief Randall Burnett. It was his third victory in 104 Cup Series races, his third victory and 13th top 10 finish this year, and his first victory and third top 10 finish in four races at Texas. Joey Logano finished second, posting his 15th top 10 finish in 27 races at Texas and his 14th top 10 finish this year. Justin Haley finished third, posting his first top 10 finish in two races at Texas Motor Speedway. Then it was Austin Cindric. He was the highest finishing rookie. He finished in 15th place, and this was just an amazing win. He played the spoiler at Texas. They say everything is bigger in Texas, and certainly NASCAR's Round of 12 playoff opener at Texas Motor Speedway lived up to that billing. From playoff consequences to a red flag delay and to bumper banging aggression to the tire fall off and record statistical marks, there were no shortage of competitive drama in Sunday's race. It was Richard Childress Racing Tyler Reddick that prevailed, taking the green flag by 1.190 seconds over Penske Racing's Joey Logano in the final 24 green flag lap run to the checkered flag. It was the 26-year-old Californian's third career victory and his first win on an oval after claiming trophies on two road courses earlier this season. We talked about Haley finishing in third. Then it was Ryan Blaney finishing fourth, Chase Briscoe rounding out the top five. Then it was Eric Jones, William Byron, it was the pole sitter, Brad Keselowski finishing in seventh, Kyle Larson in eighth, and Denny Hamlin finishing in 11th place. The race was marred by a record number of cautions, many from drivers having tires go down, playoff drivers having problems on the day. On lap 79, Bell brought out the caution with a flat tire. He was able to stay on the lead lap but spun again on lap 137, and the team was unable to repair the car. He ended up finishing in 34th. Alex Bowman hit the outside wall on lap 98. The team had to fix the tow link, and he lost 8 laps. He battled back to 5 laps down but finished in 29th. Chase Elliott finished 32nd, and while leading the race near the end of Stage 2, he lost a tire, got loose into the outside wall. The car caught fire, and he had to get out, ending his day. The race was red flagged for 55 minutes on lap 221 due to rain and lightning, and Stage 1 was won by Kyle Larson, Stage 2 by Ryan Blaney. There were 36 lead changes among 19 drivers and a track record of 16 cautions for 91 yellow flag laps. I think I said 13 cautions earlier. The average speed of the race was 114.784 miles per hour. The time of the race was 4 hours, 21 minutes, and 53 seconds, not counting the red flag. So your thoughts about what happened at Texas Motor Speedway and the top 10 drivers?
Like I said earlier, you know what? Some of the drivers are not having good runs.
Well, I think Scott Miller said the top four drivers all said that they used conservative settings on their tire pressure, and they did not have the problem with the tires that you saw from the other drivers. So I think that says a lot.
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, you know, how many years have we gone that we've seen this many non-chase drivers win a race?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, the non-chase.
I don't remember ever seeing this many non-playoff drivers win.
I mean, the chase drivers are having... They're having problems. They're having issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and before, you know, it's always the non-chase drivers. You know, it's kind of like the drivers, you know, kind of give the chase drivers, you know, their kind of their respect. But it's not even that. It's just like, you know, just
you know what
just
I think part of it is, too, Sal? I think that they brought so much parity with this next-gen car that what's happening is that some of these drivers are getting desperate and they're willing to try some of these things that they're doing with the PSI. I think they're trying to do things to get that competitive edge, but it's biting them back. And if they're not getting the competitive edge that they want from doing those kind of things. So these guys played it conservative and they ended up winning the race. So you got to be there at the end if you want to win.
You know what, and that makes, and you know, Sharon, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, thank you.
You know, it makes a it makes a lot of sense. You know what?
I hit one.
Oh no, you hit them a lot. You know, but I mean that makes a lot of sense. You know, it's. You know, nobody knows what's going on behind closed doors at the shops, you know, especially now, you know, especially, you know, with the way this whole season's gone with this car, you know what, teams are willing to take different chances. They're willing to try different things. They have to, because, you know.
It's the old proverbial risk versus reward.
Yeah, we haven't really seen any domination this year by any one driver, not like we did last year when Kyle Larson won the championship. You know, he put together, you know, all those race wins. You know, and we just didn't see it this year. You know, we didn't see, you know, one driver, you know, just really step up, you know, and just be the, you know, the dominating factor. There hasn't been a dominating factor. Or, you know, the teams have gone back and forth on the wins. You know, we haven't seen a manufacturer, you know, really just take control of the whole season, you know, and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been,
and we're seeing drivers like Michael
McDowell
racing up, you know, near the top 10 or in the top 10. Which we haven't seen in a long, long time. So
yeah. I mean Chris Buescher
won
a race, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean Tyler Reddick went three races this year. You know, RCR was so far behind, you know, in their technology department. You know what? Everyone was wondering, you know, what would RCR ever win a race?
Yes.
You know, again, you know, in the next 2 to 3 years, you know, and look at already Tyler Reddick, you know, it's already got this is third win this year.
Yeah.
You know, the next year, you know, they're bringing in Kyle Busch, who happens to be taking over the number 8 car, which is what Tyler Reddick's in.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to wonder, you know, how much of a powerhouse is RCR going to, they're going to be a powerhouse next year, you know, with, you know, Kyle Busch coming in. How's all that
mm-hmm.
going to play out? You know, Kyle and Austin Dillon, you know.
Yep.
You know.
Well, and some of this could change with some of these penalties that we were just talking about earlier, too. We talked about the incident between Ty Gibbs and Ty Dillon, and then the incident between Denny Hamlin and William Byron. So it's going to be interesting. You know, keep your eye to the news tomorrow, because I do think that there will be some penalties.
Oh yeah, I'm sure there will be. You know, it's going to be interesting. You know, whether you know what's going to happen.
Mhm. So we'll see what happens. Do you want to cover the points?
Yeah, let me get to the points. The points are are we doing the playoff points or are we doing the whole
points? Yeah, go ahead and do the playoff points. That's fine.
Okay, the playoff points are right now we got in first place is Joey Logano. Second place is Ross Chastain. Third is William Byron. Fourth is Kyle Larson. Fifth is Ryan Blaney. Sixth is Denny Hamlin. Seventh is Chase Elliott. And eighth is Daniel Suarez. So Daniel Suarez and Chase Elliott are tied for points right now.
Mhm.
And then in ninth is Chase Briscoe, Austin Cindric, Christopher Bell, and Alex Bowman round out the top 12. So you got 4 points. You got Briscoe is 4 points below the cutoff. Cindric is 11 points below the cutoff. Bell is 29, and Bowman is 30. So Bell and Bowman, they still have time to make up some points, but they're almost in a must-win situation there.
Yeah, I picked Bell this weekend, too. I thought he was going to win at Texas. So we'll have to see what happens. But.
And then with all the bad races Chase Elliott has, he went from being a favorite to, you know,
mm-hmm.
possibly not even making the final four in Phoenix.
Yeah, yeah. But Elliott could win at Talladega, too. He could also win at Homestead, so we'll have to see. And we'll have to see how the penalty affects drivers like William Byron. So, and Ty Gibbs, no, Bubba is racing for the, never mind. It's Bubba Wallace that's racing for the owner's points.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, so that's not even a, I mean,
yeah.
I don't even think the fans pay attention to none of that.
Yeah, I know. It's really a shame. But, yeah, The owner's points, the owners certainly watch that, and that's why they made the change that they made at Trackhouse to put Bubba Wallace into that 45 and move Ty Gibbs over to the 23. But interesting stuff.
Yeah,
and
it is.
This year has just been so different than any other playoff season that we've seen. And I can't wait to see what happens at Talladega and Homestead.
Yeah, you're kind of wondering what's going to happen with, you know, if they take 50 points away from Byron, that'll put him.
It puts him on the bubble.
That'll put him below. No, that puts him below, Bowman.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, he'll
right.
He'll be in a must-win situation. Yeah, because he's got the 3,058 points. And if they take 50 points away, he'll be below Bowman, way below Bowman.
Yeah.
He'll be in a must-win situation.
Or
if they take 100 points away, you know, any point they take away, it's gonna knock him. I think it's gonna be a minimum of 50 points.
Yeah,
but,
and you know what?
You know,
they're going to try to make sure he would have to be in a must-win situation. I wonder if they'll take away his playoff eligibility.
I don't. You know what? I think you can't in this situation because I don't think it was. Yeah, he did hit Denny Hamlin under the yellow, but he never really put anybody in danger. Not like the way Ty Gibbs did.
Well, not only
they
were both hitting each other back and forth.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And then Denny Hamlin came back and tried to spin him. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he just didn't succeed. But what would have happened if Hamlin would have succeeded in spinning him? You know what? Do you like in football, do you offset the penalties, you know, and not penalize anybody? Or do you – I mean, if they penalize – Byron, you have to penalize Hamlin too because he went and tried doing the same thing. He didn't succeed, but he was still aggressive using his car, you know, to try and bump him. So I mean,
mm-hmm.
NASCAR's gonna have to look at it and just say, hey, you know what? We either let it go, or you know what? They both get penalized.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see what they do there. But it's going to change this whole. It has the potential to change the playoff thing, the playoff points
exactly.
Here and the way it stands right now. The other thing is that they may opt to do nothing because they may kind of feel like maybe these guys kind of took care of it between themselves. Denny Hamlin's not going to see it that way, that's for sure. But I don't know. I think that any time you use your car as a weapon, it's not a good thing. And the fact that they both were hitting each other, the move by Byron was certainly the biggest move because Hamlin ended up in the infield spinning and did lose track position. So
I'm glad I'm not in the car. Yeah, well, I mean, what happens if he doesn't go through the grass? You got to remember the grass plays a big factor, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
he
spit through the grass. You know what? I mean, you know, what would happen if it had been on the track? I mean, just like when Hamlin went after him and hit him, he was on the asphalt. He couldn't spin him. You know, maybe Byron doesn't hit him that hard, you know what, and Hamlin doesn't spin either, you know, but it happened that he went through the grass, you know, so, of course...
Those are the intangibles that's hard to gauge. But Denny did end up with a top 10 finish. But who knows? Maybe he could have won. Maybe he could have won. We'll have to wait and see what NASCAR does.
Yeah.
So
that's
you
true.
Said you're gonna be at the racetrack this week?
Yeah, I'll be at the ARCA race over in All American Speedway.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad you're going to be there. It's going to be a good one.
I fly out Saturday morning. Yeah, I fly out Saturday morning and then fly back Sunday morning.
Okay. Well, Sal, thanks for being here, and we'll look forward to talking to you on the other side on Monday, next Monday night, when we're reviewing the races from the ARCA Menards Series and from the NASCAR races at Talladega.
All right. All right, everybody, have a safe weekend. We'll talk to you all next week. Good night.
Okay, good night, everybody. All right, it is time for NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. I'm bringing everybody into the queue now, and we've got our regular crew back again. Let's start with Andy Huseman. Welcome to the show, Andy. Andy Huseman.
Andy Huseman.
Karen, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm laughing at myself.
It's okay.
I can't believe I said that.
Well, yeah. I could very well be Jay's long-lost brother. It is entirely possible. You never know. So, but it's good to be on. I'm certainly thankful to be here tonight, and always appreciative of the opportunity. So looking forward to it.
Yes, indeed, Andy Lasky. Also, we do have Jay Huseman here. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. I've been welcomed many different ways, but that was a new one. So hoping my cell service holds up for about 10 minutes, and then I'll be back home and can fully lock up.
Okay. And we also have Michael Orzel. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey-o! Well, you know, at least you didn't cross-pollinate me and Jay. That would be, that's like oil and vinegar right there, oil and water.
Oh, I still can't believe I said that. I've called Sal Jay. I've called Jay Sal. Now I've got Andy Huseman. It's terrible getting old. Anyway, we've got a lot to talk about here on Hot Topics tonight. So, Andy, I'm going to let you be the first one to bring up the first topic.
There is a lot to talk about, and this one's thankfully not a huge hot topic, but I did see, and I think we all did, that Jimmy Johnson has elected to finally step away from full-time racing. Such an accomplished career, so certainly curious what everyone's thoughts are about that.
Okay. Jay, your thoughts?
To me, I know he stepped away from NASCAR.
Okay, Jay, you're coming in and out. We're having a hard time hearing you, so I'm going to go to Mike, and then we'll try you again in a second here. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, hopefully we get Jay back here shortly, but with regard to Jimmy Johnson, not really a surprise. He stepped away from NASCAR a few years ago because he was saying the schedule was getting to be too much of a grind, and what more could you want? It's Jimmy Johnson, 84 career wins and 7 championships. I think he did fairly well in NASCAR. His IndyCar stint, I would say, would be a little more forgettable. Not the most, marquee performance in IndyCar, but then again, he's Jimmy Johnson. What's he got to prove to anybody? Hopefully he had his fun in IndyCar. And like you said, he's stepping away from full-time driving. He left the door open a couple weeks ago, mentioned he might come back and race the All-Star race at North Wilkesboro. He is eligible for the NASCAR All-Star race if he chooses to run that. Obviously, he would have to find a ride and put together some sort of a deal to get him into the race. But in terms of eligibility, Jimmy Johnson would be eligible to do the All-Star race at North Wilkesboro. So we might see him back, not just racing, but in a NASCAR Cup Series car next year. Be interesting to see, but I wish the very best for Jimmy Johnson.
Okay, Jay, you want to try it again? Okay, we might have to come back to Jay on that one. I will go ahead and just say that, I think it's interesting. He wants to spend more time with his family. You can't fault anybody for wanting to do that. And they even talked about him spending that, a year or two outside of the country and taking the girls abroad. Somewhere, I think they mentioned Italy or Germany. I was the other one, I can't remember. But they talked about, going abroad and letting the girls have a year or two abroad and that experience and then coming back. So I really applaud him for putting the family first and really putting that into his considerations. He's talked for a while about the grind of the long season that NASCAR has and the impact that he felt that had on his family and wanting to change that. When he raced full-time this year with the IndyCar series, he felt the same thing, that that season seemed to be a little bit longer than what he was really comfortable with. So I think he's retiring just from full-time racing. He still wants to race. I think we'll still see him, and hopefully we will see him in a NASCAR race sometime soon in the 2023 season, and that all works out. But, yeah, I really wish him the best, and we'll see where all of this goes for next year. Jay, one more chance. Okay, we're not hearing from him. So, Andy, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think, you know, the stint in IndyCar was for fun. He wanted to do it. It was a completely different form of motorsports than his comfort zone that he was so successful in for so long. And like Mike said, no, maybe it wasn't the most successful tenure of his career, but he had the right to go do what he wanted, and that was to go try something new for a couple of years. And, you know, I think he had his fun with that. He got to try it, and now maybe he can step back and pick and choose, you know, as he put it, 10 or so bucket list items or races, rather, that he can go do next year. Maybe, you know, we can see him run that Le Mans event or maybe the Rolex 24. I certainly hope to see him continue to dabble in IMSA a bit. That would be a lot of fun to see. Maybe some NASCAR races. You never know. It'd be cool to see him do that. And maybe he'll still run races like an Indy 500 or something like that. So certainly a very well-storied career. He's had a lot more success than most drivers can say they have. And obviously, you know, he's doing things on his own terms. And the fact that he can still go out and race part-time, that's awesome. So hopefully we'll see him back in a stock car at some point. And obviously a very successful in a career that's worth celebrating for sure.
Okay, very good. Jay, are you back? Not yet. So, Mike, your follow-up.
Nothing really more to add. Just well wishes for Jimmy Johnson. I am interested to see what he does do. He did run the Rolex 24 a couple of years ago. Obviously, he's done two seasons, one part-time, one full-time in the IndyCar series. But like he said, he's got the bucket list things. Maybe he's going to go back and do another off-road truck race, kind of where he got his start in racing, or who knows where we might see Jimmy Johnson. But I do wish him the very best for him and his family as he moves on to the next phase of his life.
Yeah, he did talk about that double duty between the Coca-Cola 600 and the Indy 500. We've also heard Kyle Busch have interest in doing those two races, so we might see a couple of NASCAR drivers in that Indy 500 as well as the Coca-Cola 600. But as you know, along with Carvana has already said that they'll support wherever he wants to race. So he has a sponsor that he's bringing in with him wherever he goes. So that's pretty cool to have. And like you say, he's earned that right to have those kind of sponsors and that kind of support. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what does happen next year and the 10 races that he chooses to race. I suspect if the SRX is still going, we'll probably see him in possibly an SRX race as well. So, but IMSA is definitely on that list, and NASCAR, and who knows what else. We'll be surprised with whatever it is, I'm sure. Andy, your follow-up?
Nothing to really add. I think that, you know, obviously, you know, hopefully we'll see him do some stuff down the road. I'm certainly looking forward to, you know, seeing him run some part-time stuff, but yeah, certainly looking forward to that, and we'll see what he ends up doing next year.
Okay, Jay is here. I'm going to try you again, Jay.
Yeah, I am back on. So I heard a little bit of what everybody was saying there, and the only part I can add is, like I said, I'm happy that he's in a position. You mentioned with the sponsor, Carvana, that it will back him in whatever races he chooses to, whatever brands, and I think he can be a great motorsports representative by doing so and increase awareness in all motorsports that he participates in and get some of that crossover involvement that we've all been looking for.
Yes, we've been talking about that, and that's always a good thing. Okay, Jay, why don't you bring up our next hot topic?
Well, I don't even know how to put this one, but the problem with tires at Texas, I know it's kind of a carryover, and we got a lot of different feeds on it, but to me, of the tire issue at Texas, and thus then what NASCAR needs to be doing about it or their involvement in it as well.
Okay. So, Mike, your thoughts about that?
This is probably going to be a spicy one. We knew it was coming, but this was another week and another really bad look for the Gen 7 car with a race that was dominated by mechanical issues. This is a tire issue. I don't know that Texas is quite as bad as the 2008 Brickyard 400, but it was really, really close. The racing itself was almost non-existent, and it really felt like it was just racing to the next random tire failure, and that had by far the largest impact on the race. And this has kind of created a story for the NASCAR playoffs where the car and the problems with the car are the lead story and not the competition that's going on as NASCAR is trying to determine their championship. And that's a really bad look. As far as what can be done right now, I don't know. With regard to the safety of the car, we saw some really hard hits. Kevin Harvick posted he was in a form of physical therapy today. Cody Ware had to get carried off a pit road on a stretcher. Kurt Busch is obviously still out for 2 months and counting. With the safety of this car in question, there's got to be something done at this point. If nothing else, the immediate solution, they've got to increase practice time. I think that's been a major part of why we've seen mechanical failures this year, is there's just not a lot of track time prior to the race where teams can evaluate their setup and see if the setup that they're trying to run with is going to induce problems with the car, or if the tire is not really working out the way Goodyear expected it to. If there's practice at races, and there's not even practice at all of them, but if there's practice, it's only maybe a 15-minute warm-up prior to qualifying, which isn't really enough time to expose any problems that have come up during the race. So that might have helped mitigate the problems at Bristol and Texas these past two races if they were able to identify that. Rodney Childers also posted some interesting technical information. I won't get too deep into it, but basically he's saying that the way the shocks are adjusted and mounted on the car, it forces the teams to try and run that lower air pressure in the rear to get the most downforce out of the car. And he proposed some solutions that look like they'd be fairly straightforward for NASCAR to implement in the short term that might help alleviate some of these issues with regard to the tires and tire pressure. But there's a lot of issues with this Gen 7 car, and there's been questions that have kind of come back to the forefront that started in the offseason last year during the development, where there were questions about the testing process, questions about the results of some of the crash tests, and some of that, those concerns that we might have a less safe car than what was being advertised have really come back to the forefront. And I don't know if we're quite to park the car yet, but we're really close to park the car and put them in Xfinity cars for the rest of the season if we're up against that much of a safety concern combined with mechanical failures that we've had. This shouldn't be the story coming up to the last half of the playoffs, but it's the primary story right now, and something has got to be done at this point.
Okay, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the last couple of weeks have been very tough with various failures, and I think, you know, having watched the race today, I mean, this race reminded me of the Brickyard back in 08. I mean, it was just – constant tire failures, and it's really unfortunate to see that. Just so many growing pains this year. I think when you consider it's a completely brand new race car and, you know, really a whole new tire design by Goodyear. And honestly, the tires haven't been horrific this year, but, you know, Texas was an example of one they got wrong, you know, and so that's something they'll have to learn from. I think Mike brings up a pretty solid point about maybe we do need to see these teams get back to, you know, the practice that we used to see where they would run a Friday practice, and or maybe you extend that time on Saturday where it's still a two-day show. But, you know, maybe more on-track time would be beneficial so that they can learn, and maybe, you know, they would be able to figure out that, hey, we got an issue with these tires, you know, and maybe they could make an emergency decision to switch the tire compound or something before the race. I don't know, just a thought. But, you know, I think that with it being a new car, one of the downfalls this season has been you know, lack of significant practice time. I think the more on-track activity they can get, the better, to learn not just about the car, but about what the tires do, you know, what the car is going to do. I mean, really, this year has been a learning season. And one of the troubling things, and I think for me, it really hit home watching the Cody Ware accident. That was frightening. That was one of the most vicious, hits that I've seen in a very long time. And to see him struggle to get out of that car in what was, to me, obvious pain, to me, that's the last straw. Something has to change here, because we've heard all season long from drivers that that's the hardest hit I've ever taken. That's the hardest hit I've ever taken. This is the worst I felt after an accident. We've had a driver that was taken out due to injury, a head injury, in an accident that, quite frankly, didn't look that bad. Alex Bowman, for example, was in an accident in which he continued in the race and said it was the hardest he'd ever hit. Chase Elliott got out of a burning car yesterday and said, I just hope nobody gets hurt. When drivers are repeatedly saying over and over again that this is not good, that's when you have to have a change. And I don't know if we're expecting a death before we do something about it, but something has to change. And I'm not trying to bash anyone in particular here, but I think that it's time for something to change. And what that is, like Mike said, I don't have a solution. I'm not smart enough to come up with one, but it's just, it's troubling to me. And that's why I'm kind of vocal about it right now, because when you see a driver like Cody Ware get out in obvious pain and discomfort, you know, and who knows what his injuries are, no one's really said anything. That's troubling. That is extremely troubling. And I think that, I honestly believe that, you know, they can get this car right. They can continue to work on it and make it better. I would like to see more data. I think Mike or somebody touched upon the fact that maybe access for the public and the media to know exactly what the crash tests are and what all the numbers say would be beneficial to learn, for everybody to know what this car has gone through, what the drivers experience when they go through a crash. To me, if I'm going to just narrow this down to one thing, this car has a much greater effect on the driver's health than the old race car. And that's unfortunate that a new car is apparently worse than the old car. So I think they can make it better. I think there's room for improvement. I think when we get to the off season, because I think that it's probably too difficult to make serious changes during the course of the year, but when we get to the off season, you know, hopefully they can take a good hard look at this thing, spend a month or a month and a half to really make some changes and put those in place for next year, because driver's health and safety really shouldn't be in a negative spotlight all the time. And yet that's what this 2022 season has developed into.
Okay. I agree with you guys that this is a serious situation. It's something that they need to look at, and nobody wants somebody to die before they do something. To even say that just kind of frustrates me a little bit, because, and I'm not trying to take any hits at anybody, Andy, I'm really not, and I've heard it from others as well. Nobody wants somebody to die before they're going to do something. It's just not in anybody's DNA. So NASCAR is taking this very seriously. The drivers and the teams need to take this very seriously and work together to come up with a solution. I like the idea of the practices. I think that that's a longer practice session to maybe identify some of these things. But nothing is going to test those tires like actual race conditions. Having the longer practice session is going to be helpful, because they're going to be, trying different things. But when I listened to Scott Miller and the post-race interview that he did with the media, one of the things he said reminds me of what Tyler Reddick has gone through this entire year, going from the very first race to where he was yesterday. And one thing that, to kind of put this in perspective for me, was there were more drivers that didn't have the problem than drivers that did have the problem with tires. One of the things that Scott Miller said in his interview is that they talked to the drivers especially the top four drivers, he said, that they had talked to, had all used a conservative setup on their car. They didn't have the issues with the tires, and Tyler Reddick actually won the race. If you go back to the short track race, the clash at the Coliseum, Tyler Reddick was one of the first drivers that were out. He's an aggressive driver. He probably has an aggressive setup in his car. And I think they learned from that experience and maybe a couple of other experiences that they've had throughout the season. They went conservative at Texas. And they put a conservative setup in that car. Scott Miller said, looking at it from that perspective, the drivers that went conservative with the setup, the teams that went conservative with their setup are the teams that did not have the problems. The drivers that went aggressive with their setup are the drivers that had the tire issues. So they're going to look at that further and make that determination as a final, as an official determination this week. And I can't wait for that to come out. Tyler Reddick, I think, has learned from the experiences that he's had throughout the season. He's made the appropriate changes, and he ended up winning that race yesterday. I just think that we've had issues with tires before, and PSI is usually what comes back as part of the problem. NASCAR and Goodyear gives a recommended PSI to the drivers every single race, and I think what's happened is that a lot of these drivers, some of the veteran drivers, some of the newer drivers, everybody, there's a lot of pressure in these playoffs, and they're looking for every competitive advantage that they can get, and Rodney Chilser says it in his little spiel that he goes into with things that he thinks that can be done to make it better. And the lower tire pressure gives them more downforce, and that's why they're using that lower tire pressure. But another factor I think that plays into this is the compound that was on the track and the heat of the day at Texas. There are so many variables that go into this. The heat that they were dealing with at Texas Motor Speedway, one of the hottest races they've had all year long, and the traction that they were using, that track was still very, very slick. And that put an extra load on those tires. So I think that was a factor that played into this weekend. And that's what makes this so unique. And they've said this all year long. There are so many variables that they have to look at with each and every race and each and every situation in order to determine what happened and what went wrong and what they can do to fix it. But I do think PSI is a very easy thing that teams can do. It's probably the easiest thing that they can do to make it a little bit better for themselves when it comes to the tire wear, is not mess around with that PSI. Yeah, they're looking for that lower downforce, but you have to be there at the end of the race to win it. If you're out of the race because you get a flat tire and you wreck your car, you're not there to go after that win. So the risk versus reward, right now they're getting the risk side of that. They're not getting the reward side of that. And I think a lot of these teams need to look at that very, very closely. But I do think that the heat and the traction compound that they used was not very effective this year at Texas because of the heat. And it was very, very slippery in those corners, and those guys were slipping and sliding all over the place. So I think that needs to be looked at as well. So that's part of what I have to say. So we'll go another go around here and give Jay a chance. Jay? Your thoughts.
Well, I know they always talk about Larry McReynolds has his book of notes, and I feel like, Sharon, you just took my book of notes, because I don't think there was one point there that you made that wasn't on what I would have said. I know it's been compared to back of the, what was it, 2008 Brickyard. I was at that race. Every single car had that problem. That was a tire problem. There wasn't one car that didn't suffer through that. That's not the case here. Sharon hit on it, the lower tire pressure. And they know that. They are choosing to do that. So some of that has to fall on the teams. And if you're the driver that's taking this hit, I would be going to my team and saying, hey, don't do that. Don't put me in that position. She mentioned Tyler Reddick, one of the most aggressive drivers, has learned that's not going to work with this new car. Adapt to the new car. This is what we're driving. We have to adapt to it. Understand, Mike mentioned, I think it was, the shock. Something in that is changing the way the car handles, and that's how these teams are trying to counter it with the air pressure. Okay, that's not working. Find something else. And I want to look at something I know Mike and Andy hopefully aren't super familiar with, had to go through, but with aircraft, you have what's called an aircraft investigation board and then a safety review board. A safety review board doesn't care whose fault it is. They want to know what happened, how they can prevent it, and fix it. For the accident review, you want to have a lawyer. You don't say nothing without your lawyer because they're looking to put blame and take somebody down for accountability. Okay? That's not going to fix the problem, though. The teams, NASCAR, the drivers, all of them need to do where they're looking at it and finding the problem and what can be done to fix it. I do think they need to seriously look at maybe some more practice time that got mentioned by everybody, I think. I think that is a good step. And, again, I'm reiterating everything Sharon hit on. The so many factors this weekend, the compound that they were using and the heat. It was, they said, the hottest race at Texas that they've ever run. So all these factors led to this storm. Now, can there be little things that they can find to improve it? Absolutely. And I think they will, and I think that is a priority to them. I don't think that's not on anybody's priority list.
Yeah, and I think everybody wants a solution here. So nobody finds this satisfactory. So, Mike, your thoughts?
Well, a couple things to hit on here. First, I don't want anyone to get the impression that I think that I or anybody else wants a driver to be seriously injured or killed. I don't think that's the case at all. My concern is it feels like there's almost a collective, we're holding our breath and crossing our fingers and hoping this doesn't happen before the end of the season when they can look at that car and make some changes to it. And that's a big concern. We shouldn't have to have an instance every single week where they need to trot Scott Miller out on Sirius XM or
Mike,
one of the
I
NBC
interrupt
shows.
You. I'm so sorry.
Oh, go for it.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. We are at the time of the night that I do an announcement to all of our first-time listeners to let you know that we are going to go off the air at 10:30 p.m. Tonight, and that's Eastern time. Now, even though we go off the air, we do continue to record our conversation beyond that time, and it's part of our bonus overtime material that's available on our podcast. So what will happen is I will go out on Twitter and Facebook to let you know that the podcast is available, and at that point you can come to the player over at fanforracing.com and fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of our conversation. You'll be able to hear that bonus overtime material. Again, we don't want anybody to be caught off guard. That's why we do the announcement. And, Michael, you can go right back to it, and let's hear the rest of your thoughts.
Sure. And what I was saying is I don't think that it's a good solution that it seems like every week they've got to trot Scott Miller out for damage control, whether it's on Sirius XM or NBC or wherever he's out there speaking. He shouldn't be out there having to make, I don't want to use the word excuses, but explanations, rationalizations, that shouldn't be the topic of discussion on a Monday after a race. The topic of discussion should be the racing on the track and the results of the race as dictated by how well the teams were prepared, how well the drivers drove the cars. That should be the topic of the discussion, especially during the playoffs, not mechanical issues with the car or the tires or anything else that's going on with the car. And the fact that that's the big topic of discussion is a big concern. With regard to the car, I forget whether it was Jeff Burton or Steve Letard, or it may have been kind of a back and forth between them, but I think they had a really good point during yesterday's broadcast. Everyone wants to see a car that's difficult to drive, and by everyone's account, the Gen 7 car is much more difficult to drive than the previous generation cars. And that's not a bad thing. The bad thing is how unpredictable it is. And the issue with mechanical reliability making it unpredictable is taking it out of the driver's hands. A car that is hard to drive is good. That puts it in the hands of the driver, who is able to get the very most out of their equipment, because the reason that these drivers in the NASCAR Cup Series are considered to be the very best stock car drivers in the world is because they have that ability to find the very edge of control where the car is the absolute fastest, get the most performance out of that car, and do it better than their competitors. And when the car is completely unpredictable with random failures, that takes that ability away from the drivers. And forcing them to step their performance back isn't the solution either. And to try and say that, well, it's just the team setup, or it's the way the drivers are driving the race cars, at best, that's a Band-Aid for the solution of the root problem, which is the design of the car. And I don't know what more we can do in the next 6 weeks, because that's how many races we have left in the season. But there's some serious concerns here, and it's more than just a couple little tweaks. And it's not just a, hey, don't run as low of an air pressure in the tires either, because we've taken away so many other things that teams can do to set their car up for their best chance of success. Air pressure is one of the few things they have left. So unless you're going to go a full IROC and issue them identically set up race cars, you've got to have some sort of way for teams to set the car up the way they want it, and air pressure is one of those things. Having the car have unpredictable failures, whether it be tires, the steering rack, any other than mechanical issues that we've seen with the car this year, that takes it out of the team's hands, it takes it out of the driver's hands, and it really makes it, it's less of a competition than it is just a survival contest. And at least for me as a race fan, that's not entertaining racing. That's just watching chaos unfold. And a little chaos every once in a while is okay. Like the junk food of racing that is super speedway racing, that's okay in small doses. But when every single race is out of the driver's hands and is chaos, that's not a good thing. And it's not a good look for a sport that's trying to present itself as a serious world-class elite motorsport competition. I don't know. I'm on a soapbox here, but I hope it gets better. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, Andy?
And I guess, you know, my follow-up would be, I think, you know, I'll reiterate what I said earlier, too. Like, the Cody Ware accident, to me, just to see him, you know, get out of the car in pain, I mean, it just
yeah. –
and I'm not even really talking about tires, per se. That, you know, it may very well be that aggressive setups led to some of those tire failures. But I think, it's a trend, and I don't think this can be disputed at all, is the trend of – drivers experiencing harder impacts this year versus the past, which tells me that work needs to be done to this race car. So that's what got me a bit fired up, and understandably so, because I don't like seeing any driver get hurt or in pain after a wreck. And it's inevitable that we're going to have hard impacts. That's the risk involved in racing, and that's understood. And maybe we were lulled into thinking that it was, you know, incredibly safe with the old car, because the old car was really extremely safe. Look at Ryan Newman, able to walk away from that wreck a couple years ago. I think all I can really reiterate is that this car needs some work, and I think it's okay to say that. I think that NASCAR would probably admit that. The teams and drivers would probably admit that. It seems that it's just extremely rigid and not as forgiving as the old car. They talk about it all the time on the broadcast, how, you know, a driver will take a severe impact and the car looks, you know, pretty well intact. And in the case of Alex Bowman, Jeff Burton said it, that car would have been destroyed if it was the old car, because it had a lot more give to it. The car was so rigid that he took a big impact and was able to continue. That's a good and bad thing, because if the car is more rigid, that means that other parts are going to take more of the impact, Exhibit A, the driver. And I think that's where maybe some tweaking can be done. You know, I'm not trying to point fingers at anybody here. This is a brand new car. And with a brand new car or any brand new anything, there's going to be growing pains. But I think it's safe to say we can't sit here and say that this car is 100% safe. We've seen far too many close calls this year to say that the work is done. And I think that, you know, learning through all the data that's been accumulated this season and driver feedback and whatever information they can obtain, they can work on making the safety aspect of things better. It is, without a doubt, it is NASCAR's goal that nobody gets hurt or injured. I know that and believe that 110%, that their goal is to put on safe races each and every week. But to me, it really hit home seeing that the 51 wreck yesterday, and we have to go back and look at Kurt Busch and you know, all these other drivers that have had some pretty tough impacts this year. And I think we have to say that maybe a little bit more work needs to be done. And that's an important thing, because we want to see, you know, less and less injuries and have that be less and less of a conversation moving forward. But again, the car is brand new. You know, I'm sure they've learned a lot this season that they can apply and make things better. And I know that's the sport's goal. They're always trying to do the right thing, and I know they'll do that. But I think for me, the level of concern is somewhat high based on some of the impacts and some of the driver comments we've seen throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that everybody is concerned about some of the drivers' injuries that have happened this season. We've not seen those kind of injuries happen before. We don't like seeing those kind of injuries happen, and we don't want to see drivers hurt when they're driving in these cars. But here's the thing. We started the season with NASCAR saying this is a work in progress. We know this car is not perfect. We are going to be working on it throughout the year, and we're working with the teams. We're working with the manufacturers. We're working with Goodyear. We're working with everybody within the industry to make the decisions about these cars. And I know, Andy, you haven't been here, but we brought this up before. The teams have been part of the decisions that have been made about these cars. The teams are still part of the decision about cars next. So Rodney Childers needs to take that information, and instead of posting it on Twitter, he needs to take it to NASCAR and sit down with NASCAR and say, here's some ideas on what I think can be done better. Posting it to me, I can't do anything about it. You can't do anything about it. Mike can't do anything about it. Jay can't do anything about it. He needs to take that information to NASCAR. He can't count on NASCAR reading his tweet on Twitter. He needs to take it to them. I talked earlier about what Tyler Reddick has learned and how he's adapted to what he's learned this season to make it better so that he doesn't keep making the same mistake over and over again. And that's what everybody in the sport, yeah, one of the last things that they can mess around with is the PSI on the tire. But if Goodyear is telling you this is the recommended PSI, and you make the decision that you're going to work outside of that recommended PSI, who's at fault? Is it Goodyear? Is it NASCAR? No. The team made that decision. So the accountability lies on that team. I think we need to remember, too, why NASCAR went to the next-gen car. NASCAR went to the next-gen car to create the parity so that we could see 19 different drivers win in a season, so that we could see drivers that we don't have one driver that's dominating the season. That's what the fans said that they wanted to see. Well, we have that now. The more we get to know this car, I think the less likely that's going to be. But we have that parity right now. The other thing is, Mike said something about teams want the setup in their hands. Well, they have the setup in their hands. So, if you're given a recommended PSI, why not use the recommended PSI? Things are unpredictable this year. We knew that things were going to be unpredictable. I don't know anybody who had the crystal ball that told them that Texas Motor Speedway was going to have the hottest day of the year for the NASCAR season and that that traction compound was not going to work. No, nobody has that crystal ball. Every season has some unpredictability to it. It's not just this season. Random failures, the reason they're random this year is because this is a brand new car. We expected random failures. We expected some of this was going to happen. I don't think anybody expected the injuries that we're talking about, but again, these drivers, instead of talking about it to in the media or talking about it, they need to take it to NASCAR. They need to make sure that, and I know NASCAR is aware of those injuries. They don't want to see those drivers have those kinds of injuries, but what can they do to fix it? The drivers have some input that they could give to that. The crew chiefs have some input that they can give to that. And they need to give that input to NASCAR. And I know the engineers are looking at that, and they're trying to do everything they can. Like Andy said, there's a certain amount of confidence that NASCAR is looking at that. They tell us that they're looking at it every single week. And the reason that Scott Miller is out there every single week is because they're more or less testing a new car this season with this next-gen car. Was it feasible for them to test it at every single racetrack before they introduced it? I'm guessing that probably wasn't a feasible thing for them to do. That's why they didn't do it. So they're doing it during the season. Everybody knew that from the beginning. We were told that at the very beginning of this season. It should be no surprise. One of the questions that Pete Pistone brought up is, why is this happening now to this degree when it didn't happen to the same degree throughout the season? And it's the variables that happen. It's so many different things that happen throughout the season that make this a very unique year. It's not like every other year that we had to deal with. And nobody had that crystal ball to know what kind of failures were going to happen, what kind of weather they were going to be dealing with. You know, none of that was known. So it's just, I don't know how to make it any more clear. Nobody's happy about the injuries. Everybody wants to fix the drivers and the teams, and everybody in the industry needs to take it and sit at the table and help come up with the solution rather than trying to find blame. And that's what frustrates me. NASCAR takes a lot of the blame, but these guys are a part of a team. They're a part of an organization, and everybody needs to be involved in coming up with that solution. Nobody wants to see the drivers hurt, and I agree that that crash with Cody Ware was scary. We've seen a lot of scary wrecks, and not just this year. We've seen a lot of scary wrecks that have happened before this year. If that happens every season, this is not unique. And what happened to Cody Ware, I suspect that if that wasn't a tire issue, I think there might have been something else going on with that situation. What it is, I don't know, but I know that they're looking at it, and they're going to come up with a solution. I am confident that NASCAR and these teams will work together, but it is the teams working together with NASCAR to come up with those solutions. I don't know. There was something that Mike said, and I said, how do you know that? You really don't know some of these things. We think we know, but we really don't know. We've got to do the investigation. We've got to look at the situations, and those solutions will come. And I think next year, hopefully, we'll have that better car and a lot of these troubles will be fixed. But it's never a perfect situation, and it was never a perfect situation before this year, and it's never going to be a perfect situation after this year. So it's just the unknown variables that we always deal with. And drivers are not perfect either. So teams are not perfect. There's a lot of human element in all of this as well. So, Jay, you're next.
Well, you hit on the key things, in my opinion, like I said, we are absolutely thinking alike. Sitting down, I think it was Brad Keselowski, you mentioned this last week when we had this conversation, that said if we go into 2023 without changing the car, without improving it, without making some of these adjustments, then we're failing. Right now we're learning and improving, and that's never going to stop. At least I would hope not, because you're never going to achieve perfection, so you're never going to stop. The only thing I can add here, as we've talked about this, specifically of Texas. Can Texas be run with this new car and finish a race? Well, let's talk to Tyler Reddick and the RCR number 18. How about Joey Logano in the number 22 Ford for Penske? Mm-hmm. Justin Haley, the number 31 in the Spire Motorsports. And I'm going down the list of how they finished. There were teams that managed to finish the race and not have these problems or be able to work through them. I know Tyler Reddick did have some issues. He felt the vibration. He came in. I heard on the radio today, they used up every allotment of tires they had. Some of the teams chose not to do that. They chose to go with no tires or whatever. So, again, there are things they can do to change that, and other teams
it's
didn't,
in their
and
hands.
We saw that. Exactly. So it is, and it's not just the driver's hands. It's in the team's hand. It is a team sport. Driver gets the credit. I understand that, but it is a team sport. We've talked about that with the pit crews. So there are a lot of factors and different ways it can be handled. Did Justin Haley have the fastest car at Texas? No, but he didn't have a tire problem and finished third. So what does that tell you? Maybe lowering the air pressure to have the absolute maximum fastest speed for one or two laps isn't the answer. I mean, that's their strategy to it in many different ways, and that's one of them. Not have the fastest car, but not blow a tire. So there are ways it can be handled, and I think some of these drivers and teams aren't wanting to adjust to that. They want NASCAR to adjust the car back to them, which is what NASCAR tried to do.
Okay. Is that it?
Yeah, that was it. That was it for me.
Okay. Let's see, we have a couple minutes here. Is there, Mike, a topic you wanted to make sure we talked about?
Well, I heard you and Sal talking about it a little bit before we started this segment, but I think we should probably chew on the William Byron versus Denny Hamlin, as well as the Ty Gibbs versus Ty Dillon incidents this past weekend, and what, if anything, should be done.
Okay, Andy, are you familiar with both of those situations?
Yeah, I watched the race today, so unfortunately saw both of those things happen. I think what Ty Gibbs did was incredibly unsafe when you consider the fact that, you know, he almost shoved Ty Dillon into pit crew members. So that 100% deserves a penalty. He, you know, obviously an up-and-coming talent that has a bright future in this sport, but he lets his temper get the best of him sometimes, and that was an example in which he really should be taught a lesson, and I'm not sure what that needs to be, but, you know, whether he gets parked for a race or something, points aren't going to mean anything to him because he's not really running for anything. But maybe sit him out for a race or two or something, because that kind of behavior is unacceptable. I'm going to be a little more lenient on William Byron from the standpoint of when he says that he was going to tap the 11 to send him a message, I do believe that. I don't think his intent was to turn him, although I've seen conflicting information online that from industry members, people that are, you know, privy to SMT data, that say he gassed it up before he hit the 11. So if you believe that, and then you would have to think that maybe it was intentional, but I don't know. He clearly was upset with the 11 after he got run into the fence, and or at least run up the racetrack. So I can understand the frustration there. Either way, you know, wrecking or turning somebody under caution and slamming into somebody on pit road can't happen. You know, I think, unfortunately, these drivers just lose their tempers, and I'm going to, you know, say that the long race and all the hot temperatures and everything certainly don't help that cause at all. It's easy for one to get upset and frustrated, but I don't know. I mean, Ty Gibbs for sure needs to be penalized. I can't really recall the precedent. I know we've seen examples in the past. I think, you know, Kyle Busch and Ron Hornaday in the truck race about 11 years ago was an example, and there may be others. And in those cases, those drivers were parked. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But, you know, certainly intentional incidents under caution really, really shouldn't be taking place.
Okay, Jay.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do, if anything, NASCAR does post-race. I know they said that they missed it, both of them in this case, the Denny Hamlin, William Byron one. I kind of understand. They said they were more concerned with Martin Truex and what initially brought out the caution and the response, safety response to him. So, but also, and I'm not in that booth of what they all got going on, how many people they got watching, eyes on everything. As far as missing them both, I haven't watched the Xfinity race from Saturday yet, so I heard about the incident. I haven't seen it or can make any comment on specifically that. But you're right, and especially under caution and on pit road or in the area where somebody else can be hurt is a very big, a frowned upon thing. So I know, I think it was Scott Miller on this one. I'm not sure who made the statement that said had they seen it during the race, they would have taken action. Well, you can still take action. And I go back to Noah Gregson's incident on the road course with Sage Karam. That was after the race, that the next week they penalized him in points going into that. So that is on the table, and I think they do need to look at it. The one thing I don't agree with is Denny Hamlin. I understand his wasn't in during caution, but he spent an entire race trying to bully and push around and get even with Ross Chastain. He wasn't even racing anymore. He was going out there to try and derail Ross Chastain. And when he was warned by NASCAR, he laughed at him. So I don't know if he's the one to be the poster child for payback, but again, this was a little bit different. It was under caution, and I know that is certainly a different set of rules when you look at it.
Yeah, I'm glad NASCAR is making this call and not me, because it's going to be a tough call. I know it's not a tough call when it comes to a penalty under caution, but the other thing that they've got to look at is how many times Denny Hamlin came back at him throughout the race, and they were pushing each other back and forth during the race. So that does build up. I'm not saying that William Byron is faultless. He deserves to be penalized for what he did on pit road, but I think Denny Hamlin did not put any water on the situation. I think he added more coals to the fire. And I think at some point, I wish somebody would sit Denny Hamlin down and kind of teach him how to do that instead of adding more fuel to the fire, because he tends to do that versus trying to diffuse the situation. He tends to try to elevate the situation. So I don't think he helps the situation at all. Ty Gibbs, I totally agree with you. That, to me, was very scary to watch as well, because when he pushed Ty Gibbs' car, there were crew members working on a car, and they could have very easily have been hurt in that situation. So his penalty may need to be different because of the fact that he's not racing for a championship, and I agree with that. But he needs to be maybe parked for that kind of situation. I think any time a car is used as a weapon on the track, it's a serious situation that needs to be addressed. But I think Denny Hamlin is just as guilty of that during that race. I don't know who appointed him as the arbiter of situations on the track. But have you noticed that Denny Hamlin seems to always be involved in these situations that are happening on the track? I don't think that that is a coincidence. And I do think that he's probably giving as much as he's getting. And that's why he's getting some of this, is because he's given an awful lot of it. So I do think that NASCAR's got a tough decision to make here. I could see it going either way, and I said that earlier. They may decide that these guys have taken care of it among themselves, but I do think they have to do something more with Ty Gibbs doing that under caution. I don't know what they're going to do, but I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do do. Now, Sal brought up the situation on pit road. He said, he reminded me that when Noah Gragson had that incident where he backed up into the other car, I don't know if that was a year or 2 years ago, there was not a penalty that was issued for that. And he seems to think there might not be a penalty issued in this situation, but because there were crew members that could have been hurt in that situation as well. So I don't know what they're going to do. I think it's going to be an interesting scenario. And like I said, to start this out, I'm glad I'm not happening to make this decision. NASCAR's got a tough one on their hands with this. But something has to be done. Mike?
Jen, you used a key phrase there, using your car as a weapon. That's completely unexcusable. We just spent the past 30 minutes talking about the safety concerns with this car, and now all of a sudden you have drivers who are deciding they're going to intentionally cause wrecks. And it's one thing to run a guy hard under green. Example, Denny Hamlin running Ross Chastain up the track and into the wall at Pocono under green. Not the best situation, but if you're going to handle a beef with a driver, racing him a little bit hard, don't leave him room, run him into the fence. I don't know if I want to say that's acceptable, but it's more acceptable than running into a driver under caution, especially at a race like Texas where we talked about record high temperatures. The drivers are extremely hot. They're tired. Under caution, it's reasonable to expect they're going to loosen those belts. They're going to have their hands off the wheel, taking a drink of water. They're not going to be on guard for an impact and an incident, and there's a very high likelihood that they could get hurt. And even worse, like you said, is on pit road where you have people who don't even have a helmet on who are around cars, and now you're deciding you're going to use your car as a weapon on pit road around other cars. Absolutely unacceptable. There's no situation where it's even remotely acceptable. NASCAR has not sent a clear enough message, apparently, because it keeps happening, that using your car as a weapon is unacceptable. And they need to start sending that message louder, clearer, more frequently, and more harshly until drivers get the idea in their heads that they cannot use their car as a weapon, no matter how badly they feel like they were wronged, how much they feel like somebody cut them off or didn't give them room or raced them too hard or whatever their concern is. You do not use your car as a weapon, especially not under yellow, and double especially not on pit road after the race when there are people around the other race cars who don't have the protection around them that drivers inside of race cars have. Completely unacceptable, and I hope NASCAR drops the hammer at them. Throw the whole book at them. Hit them with every single page.
Okay, Andy. I agree. It is unacceptable. Andy.
Yeah, I'm glad that NASCAR's, you know, said they're going to go back and look at both those incidents. You know, like I said, I think the pit road incident is quite a bit more severe than the on-track incident, but they both probably should be looked at, and I guess we'll see what happens. But, yeah, interesting week, obviously, an eventful race at Texas, and, you know, I would have to believe that penalties may be forthcoming. And, it, oh, by the way, Talladega's this weekend, so certainly a crazy couple weeks in the sport, that's for sure.
Okay, Jay?
Well, I think we're all in agreement that it does need to be addressed, you know, depending on whether or not you think they ought to be hit with the entire book, as Mike said, with every page. That's kind of funny. But it does need, that message does need to go out. And we've seen it in the past. A monetary fine doesn't necessarily cut it, especially now where all three series are in the playoffs. You start talking about points, it matters big time. So I think that is, if they're going to look at it and make a statement and make it hurt, that's where it's going to come from. If it were me and I were having to make that call, It's going to come in points. It's not going to be dollars. It's going to be points.
Well, one thing that was going through my mind is park them for the start of the race. Maybe they don't start the race for two laps or something. Maybe they can't start the race until three laps in. But park them. Don't let them that race at the same place that everybody else started the race, because they need to have a severe penalty. And I do agree with that. Anytime something like that happens, it's just that. And I brought up the Noah Gregson situation because they didn't give the penalty then. They should have, I think, they should have definitely given the penalty then, but they did not. So I just worry about whether or not they will give the penalty. I hope they do throw the book at them. Like Mike said, they deserve it, because you should never, ever use your car as a weapon. And we'll have to see what happens. I just think that, again, I worry about Denny Hamlin not helping this situation, but adding fuel to the fire instead of trying to quench it. So I think at some point, at the very least, we need to maybe give him some kind of training in how to deal with these situations in a different way as well. So, Mike?
I know we're short on time, so I'll keep it short. Hopefully we're talking about this again on Thursday, and hopefully it's in the context of big penalties for all the drivers who were involved in this. You're right about Denny Hamlin being a common denominator on it, but to his credit, maybe I'm forgetting an incident. Denny Hamlin definitely will retaliate against drivers on the racetrack, but I can't think of an incident where Denny Hamlin intentionally wrecked somebody under caution, and I don't think that I've ever seen Denny Hamlin intentionally run into somebody on pit road for retaliation for something that happened on the racetrack. Definitely a common denominator there, but I think the more critical issues right now around William Byron and Ty Gibbs. Both of those drivers, like you said, park them for a portion of the race, park them for their coming weekend. Just because they didn't get issued a penalty during the race itself when the incident happened, it doesn't, or at least it shouldn't, mean that they're immune from further review and penalties later on in the week because, like NASCAR said, they missed it happen on the racetrack. Just because they missed it on the track does not mean that behavior is acceptable, and that clear message needs to be sent that you can't just do it and hope you get away with it. You won't get away with it, and you will be penalized, whether it's during the race when it happens or during the week going into the next race. You need to have those penalties, and they need to be severe to the point where they are a deterrent to keep drivers from doing this.
The only other thing
I have a question real quick.
Probation for the rest of the year as well, where they're being watched. Go ahead, Jay.
Whose car was it that went nose-to-nose with Alex Bowman post-race victory celebration when you know those drivers are unbuckled and celebrated?
Oh, yeah.
I believe
Ooh,
that was the
point.
Number 11 of Denny Hamlin. There you go.
I forgot
right.
about that one.
And there was no penalty there either. And there should
exactly.
have been. So I that's the part that worries me, is that there has been precedence here where NASCAR has not given penalties. It worries me that they might not hear, but I hope that they do throw the book at them. I hope they do sit them down and don't let them race for whatever period it is. I hope they're parked. Thank you, everybody. We are at the end of our show here tonight. We'll go ahead and do our roundtable. Andy, we'll start with you.
Yeah, first off, Jay, that's a good example there. I'd forgotten that one, too. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting week for sure. But CB14 fan on Twitter, and I know it's been a little bit, so nice to be back and looking forward to I should be on Thursday. I'm off Thursday, Friday, so I'll plan to be on
Yay!
Thursday night.
It's good to have you back, Andy. Jay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always nice to have the entire group here, most certainly. So I guess it's a square table, round table, triangle. I know we've had them all. So, but you can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, Mopar MJ8, on Twitter and Instagram. And I want to be clear about something. Just because Denny Hamlin wasn't penalized, I'm not saying this time they shouldn't be either because Denny Hamlin wasn't. I just think Hamlin needs to watch what he calls for, because it could come back on him when it's deserved as well.
Okay, Mike.
excuse me, Mike underscore Zell on Twitter, Mike double underscore O on Reddit. It is great to talk to everybody. I should be available on Thursday, so I look forward to having a conversation again.
Okay. And I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter, Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com where we have our Fan for Racing radio player. I really enjoy the conversation with our Fan for Racing crew, so thank you to everybody, Andy, Jay, Mike, and Sal, who was on earlier. We had an opportunity to kind of talk about some of these hot topics as well, and I do think that we appreciate all of our listeners that tune in to our show as well. So thank you for taking the time to do that. We appreciate each and every one of you. And we've got the preview show coming up for this Thursday night. And it's great to hear that both Mike and Andy are going to be available for that show as well. So we should have the four of us back on Thursday nights for Hot Topic. And the we'll know the results of the penalties or no penalties. And we'll have that to talk about as well. And any other news that comes up this week. So with that, guys, I think we're ready to call it a night, unless there's anything more that you guys want to add.
Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Talk to you Thursday.
Good night, everybody.